You're listening to continuing coverage of the Rust Alex Baldwin movie shooting trial from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
Mr. Souza, without saying anything that Ms. Hutchins said to you, can you give the jury an idea of the kind of education and training that Ms. Hutchins received after she came to the United States?
Yeah, I know that she had spent a little time at the University of South Carolina. It's my understanding that's where her and Matt actually met.
And who's Matt?
Her husband.
Okay.
She would have been her husband, Matt Hutchins. I know she did the program at UCLA. I think it was the producer's program. I know she did the master's program at AFI, American Film Institute.
And do you recall when she completed the master's program through AFI?
Oh, that I'm not sure. Gosh.
No worries.
Yeah, I'm not sure when. I know she did. She was very, very interconnected with AFI.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did her background and training, did that go into part of your decision to bring her onto this project?
Yeah, I'm always impressed when AFI is a prestigious name in our business. I think it's always impressive to me when someone goes through there. I think as a woman cinematographer, I think that's doubly impressive, just because if you look at the numbers in this business, they're sort of atrocious in that regard. But yeah, I think, you know, and that coupled with the work I'd seen from her, and just, you know, she was very keen to do a Western, as I think all filmmakers are, because it's just a really interesting thing to do visually.
Okay.
And, but she, yeah, I think between those things, between her work and her, you know, her background, I think she was kind of a no-brainer to me.
At some point, did you and Ms. Hutchins come to Santa Fe to begin pre-production work on Rust?
We did, yes.
Approximately when was that?
Oh, gosh. Let me think back about this. We filmed in... Sorry, I don't want to conflate it with the second go-round. We were filming in October that time, so I believe we would have come out, if I go back... September in, I guess it would have been late August. Yeah, or the tail end of August or beginning of September. But yeah, we both came out around the same time. She came from Los Angeles. I live up in the San Francisco Bay Area, so I came from there. And I think she might have gotten there either the day before or after me.
Can you explain to the jury how other members of the crew are hired? What goes into hiring camera people and armorers and prop assistants?
Sure. I think the department heads will sort of pick their team. Like for the camera team, Helena would put the word out. She'd go to people she'd worked with before. She would, you know, through the union maybe, or, you know, she would basically collect resumes of people, collect, you know, recommendations from people. She would make the choices of who she would hire on a camera team. In terms of, you know, the production designer is the head of the art department, so he would pick his prop master, his set decorator, and then those people would also then pick armorer and prop assistants and people like that. The department heads would generally sort of hire their own, or at least interview and then recommend the hires to the production office.
Okay. And approximately, if you recall, when did you first meet Ms. Gutierrez?
In person, I had a phone call with her before I ever met her. One of the folks from the production office, I can't remember if it was Gabby or Roe, had told me that they had found an armorer. They told me that it was Hannah Gutierrez Reed. I had of course heard of Thel Reed, in the business, who hasn't? And so they told me that they had found her. I was keen on having what's called a show and tell, where you would basically have all the weapons that would be used for the movie more or less laid out on tables, and you would then match the cast up with what looks best for their characters and makes the most sense story-wise. And so I wanted to have that, and so the production had her call me, And she introduced herself to me, and we spoke over the phone the first time then. And then a few days later, I can't remember exactly how much, it was a day later, a few days later, I met her in person at the show and tell, and then she was training people that day as well.
And at some point, I presume that filming begins and a lot of work begins. Is that correct?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, the pre-production itself is an enormous undertaking as well. But, yeah, we eventually got to our first day of filming, yes.
I want to ask you a couple of... well, prior to your work on Rust, had you worked on any other movies where there were real firearms and an armorer?
The movie I had done before, Crown Vic, was a movie about police. And although most of the movie was spent with the two characters driving in a car, so they didn't have anything on them, there were a few occasions we had some armorer days where, yeah, there were police weapons and then an armorer there with that.
Do you recall how many days you got to experience an armorer on set?
Maybe three or four. It wasn't an enormous amount of days, but... Okay. There was not a lot of gunfire on that movie, frankly.
Okay. Can you give us an idea of what your focus is in a given day on the set?
Yeah, you know, it's mostly about like who you work with and interact with most. You know, my most direct interactions are with my director of photography, and as a byproduct of that, the camera team. But you're also talking to wardrobe and production design a lot because you're moving from set to set. They're asking you, you know, is this right? Is this okay? Is this okay? So in general, yeah, I would work, you know, my script supervisor is always there with me as well. But in general, you work with the creative departments. You are spending a ton of time with your cast, with your actors. You're blocking the scenes out. You're walking them through their performances. You're sort of getting on the same page together.
Are you largely focused on the behavior of the armorer?
No. No, I mean, you see them when they're there at set, but no, I don't generally interact with the armorer during the course of the day on set.
Okay. And let me ask you, after the show and tell and the training that you described, did you reach out to Ms. Gutierrez and compliment her?
Well, there was a day on... So I think... If memory serves, I think the first day of gunfire on the movie was day three, because that was sort of, that day was on my mind from kind of from Jump Street with this production, because it was our biggest day of the movie. It was, just to give you sort of an idea of the scale of the day, it was not just, I mean, we had, a large part of the day was there was an enormous shootout going on between these bad guys and good guys. I think four people on one side and four people on the other side. There's an enormous amount of stunt work that goes with that. You know, there's gunfire, there's the actors. But then before that, there's also, we were walking the characters through town, so the town was filled with background, which is what we call the extras who come. There were horses, there were wagons. It was an enormous day. And at the end of the day, we had made it. And it was a tough day. And when we have days like that, I generally like to go around and thank folks and congratulate people on doing a good job. If I texted her that day, it would have been because I guess I just didn't find her on set at the end of it. But the day came off, and I think, you know, everybody had a big part in that, so.
Okay. And after that day, you were complimentary of her.
After that day?
Or on that day.
On that day, yeah.
And you were complimentary of the other folks on set that day.
Yeah. No, it's, you know, I don't know if anyone's ever spent time on set, but it's quite a thing to see. The people, okay. It's just a lot of professionals doing some pretty amazing stuff, so.
Okay, great. Can you explain to the jury what Video Village is and specifically what it was on the set of Rust?
So Video Village is basically a sort of large awning or tented area There'll be a lot of chairs inside there for cast to sit, producers to sit. There's generally a chair for me, which I should have used and never did. I just tend to stay on my feet all day. And then there will be monitors that are basically a feed to the cameras that we're using. So you can watch what's going, what the camera sees, essentially from what they call Video Village. So you can watch the takes as we're doing them. Sometimes, as a director, you'll watch from Village. Sometimes you'll watch from set. I think every director has a different way they like to do it. For me, it's kind of a mix.
And inside Video Village, can you see what the camera sees when the cameras are not rolling?
Yeah, as long as the monitors are up. Sometimes you're dealing with wireless transmitters and things, and it seems like on any set I've ever been on, people are constantly kind of running behind the monitors and fussing with cables and transmitters and things, and monitor's not down, and then it's up, and then it's down. But in general, yeah, you can see whatever the camera sees. If the camera's powered on, you can see what's going on.
Based on your experience as the director of Rust, was Video Village a place that you would frequently encounter Ms. Gutierrez?
No, I would. You don't ever see it. Armorers are never in Video Village. They should be next to set.
Can you recall a single time that you saw Ms. Gutierrez in Video Village?
No.
All right. And can you tell the jury generally what your understanding was of where the armor is supposed to be, if the actors are using their prop guns that are real, their real mm-hmm. revolvers that they're using as prop? Where's the armor supposed to be?
Basically off camera. There's crew on set, so you'll sort of behind the camera, there are grips, there's the operators, there's sort of the people that are sort of where the camera can't see them, and you would generally expect the armor to be just sort of standing off screen, ready to hand or retrieve when we're starting or finishing the weapon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Were you ever under the impression, based on your experience, that it would be appropriate for the armorer to leave real weapons with actors and then leave the area?
No, that wouldn't be what an armorer should do, at least in my experience.
Okay. And can you give the jury an idea of, at the beginning of the filming of Rust, did you even understand what a dummy round was?
Not really. Like I said, I didn't have a lot of exposure to that kind of stuff before. I wonder, I don't exactly have a clear memory of it. I have a feeling the first time I heard the word dummy is after everything happened, to be frank.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, during the time that you were the director on Rust, and to be clear, you are directing the scenes.
Yes.
So when the actors are outfitted with their revolvers and they're preparing to film the scene, you're the person that's there directing. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm talking it through with the actors, yeah.
Did you have an opportunity to see Ms. Gutierrez engage in her armorer duties by providing firearms to actors or retrieving those firearms?
Yeah, I remember times seeing her do that. I do, yes.
Was there ever a time, well, let me ask you this. When we talk about how the armorer and the assistant director do, are you familiar with the way that the armorer and the assistant director are supposed to do a safety check of guns?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I have a pretty good understanding of it.
Okay. And what is your understanding of whether or not the armorer should load the gun in the presence of the assistant director?
Ooh, to be honest, that I don't really know.
Okay.
I'm not sure if it's supposed to come to that moment loaded, or if they're supposed to do it in that exact moment. That I'm not certain.
Let me ask you this. Did you ever see Ms. Gutierrez load a gun with dummy rounds in the presence of the actor or the assistant director?
I mean, gosh, nothing that really sticks out to me. I remember times when she would call out what was in it, you know, but I don't remember really seeing her specifically putting things in.
Okay. Do you ever recall any safety checks where you saw Ms. Gutierrez shake rounds before loading them into the gun?
I never saw anyone shake a round, no.
Thank you. What is your understanding of the overall I would say, for lack of a better word, the overall amount of power that the armorer has over the firearms and ammunition on the set?
Well, I would say that specifically since it's such a safety matter and it's such a specialized matter that there's really no one on set that should be able to override the armorer in terms of the weapons, the ammunition, how they're handled, anything. What the armorer says goes.
And would that include the star actor and producer, Mr. Baldwin?
It would include anybody, yeah.
Okay. I want to ask you a little bit about the COVID protocols that were in place on the set of Rust. Mm-hmm. We understand that this was during COVID. Tell us how that worked.
Yeah, it was during COVID. We would come to set in the mornings. They would have, you'd get in a big line. They would have the people doing the testing. There was, I believe we had like a trailer there that were there also. There was a specific kind of testing you would do that would be more like the quick nasal swab, and then there was a kind that would take longer to process. They would do both. People would mask, particularly indoors, were encouraged to. I think, you know, everyone tried to be extremely careful, and to my knowledge, we never had a positive test on the show.
Okay. Was there any kind of a requirement on the set that people needed to leave, let's say, the church or another indoor filming area to reduce the number of people inside due to COVID?
Nothing I ever heard of, no. The people who had to be there, so.
I am going to, let me ask you, you wrote the script, so mm-hmm. are you familiar with all of the scenes that were to be recorded in this
yep.
movie?
Yep.
You understand now what dummy rounds are used for?
Yeah, they're essentially, you put them in so that if there's a close-up on the gun, there is something that is in the gun that is inert, that can't do anything, but looks like there's a bullet in the gun.
To the best of your recollection, was there ever a close-up scene of an actor or a stuntman loading or unloading the lever-action rifle that was assigned to Mr. Baldwin?
No, there was not.
Based on your understanding of the scenes and script, can you think of any reason that dummy rounds would have been placed inside that rifle for filming?
No, I think, if my memory serves, I believe the only thing that rifle was going to be used for it was, there's one scene where it fires and accidentally kills somebody, but we were never going to have the rifle fire in any way because it's an underage actor in that scene holding the weapon, and so we were just going to CGI the gun blast.
Okay. And when you say CGI?
Just computer effects. You put a fake gunshot in digitally in the special effects process after you filmed.
And hypothetically, if that rifle was going to be used for actual firing, would it have blanks in it and not dummies?
Your Honor, object.
Approach.
To be clear, can you think of any reason, and I mean in terms of cinematography and what you understood about the filming of the scenes, that rifle needed to have dummy rounds?
You wouldn't see them. I mean, dummies are purely visual. If they go into the rifle, they disappear into the rifle, so you wouldn't see them, so you wouldn't need dummies in the rifle.
Thank you, sir. I'm going to take you to October 21st of 2021. Can you explain to the jury how that day began?
We got there early, as we always did. It was still dark. Gaffer was waiting there for me with mittens and a hat for both me and Helena, as he always did.
And who was the gaffer?
Serge Svetnoy.
Okay.
And we had realized that I think it was six members of the camera team were going to be leaving. And so we knew we were going to not get started, really. It was very early. I think Helena knew that they were going to have to start finding other local folks that were available for work to get us there. And so things started a little later that day than they generally did. And once, I don't remember exactly the number of people that were brought in after the other team had left.
I'm gonna stop you right
sure.
there. In your experience in the film industry, is it unusual for this kind of a disagreement to occur between production and the camera team?
I haven't had it happen on one of the movies I've directed, but I know other folks who have had that happen, yes.
And were you particularly concerned about whether the cameramen that quit were disgruntled or had any malintent towards the filming?
I wasn't concerned about anybody having any malintent. I think there was a decent amount of acrimony between them and the production office and producers over some things that had been sort of going back and forth. And they sort of, they tried to sort of, keep that thing away from me. But I hear things, what's going on? You want people to be happy. You want people to feel good about what they're doing. So
did you think that the camera crew's decision to leave was somewhat reasonable?
I don't know. That's a tough one. I wouldn't want to answer for them. I knew it was going to put us behind the eight ball a little bit, but then again, people have their concerns. People have bills to pay. They have their own needs. At the end of the day, they did what they did. When they left, I went and shook hands, and I had no hard feelings, and I hope they had no hard feelings toward me, and said I hope we work together again, because frankly they were pretty darn good at what they did.
Okay.
But I think, again, I'm not 100% privy to all the goings on there, but I think people have their concerns and the things they need to do. I think they felt they did what was right. So
okay. So you get to set, you understand that you're going to lose the camera crew, and I think we left off where Ms. Hutchins was going to try to fill some of those roles.
Yeah, I think between Helena and I think the production office, they would start putting out some feelers in an urgent manner that we need. And so then at some point, some folks came I don't know exactly how many, there might have been three or four. We were going to be down a camera that day because one of the folks that left was the A camera operator. And so we knew we were going to be operating under only one camera for the rest of the day, which, I mean, sometimes you do only use one camera when you're filming, but, you know, that's going to slow you down because sometimes when you're filming, you can have two cameras catching something at once, and now you're going to need to do that twice. So it's going to take twice the time. And so, yeah, we were sort of gearing up and girding ourselves for that and talking about our plan for the day, how we were going to go about this. Because it was already, schedule-wise, it was already going to be a difficult day.
So what was the plan for the day?
The plan for me, as I saw it, I sort of took Dave, our first assistant director, aside, and Helena, and just said, look, I think we all understand when you look at this day as scheduled, we're not going to make this. This is not going to happen. And what I don't want to do is start shortchanging the scenes that we have in front of us. What we're going to do is we are going to do the scenes that are in front of us. We're going to do them properly. We're going to work our way through. And whatever's left at the end of the day, we can't control that. That's left at the end of the day, and we'll have to figure out tomorrow. But today, we're going to do what we can.
Okay. And so, if you recall, approximately what time were you able to get filming underway?
It might have been like 9-something. I seem to remember 9-something, because that's, you know, you're getting going a couple hours late at that point.
Okay.
Yeah.
And if you recall, what were the scenes that were filmed in that session before lunch?
Yeah, we were sort of tucked into a corner of the town. It's a scene where the head lawman in the movie, his character's name is Wood. He brings a few other lawmen into town, so it's a decent sized undertaking in that you've got animals. I think we had a mule or a donkey there, and some other animals. We had horses, wagons, a lot of extras. And you have these three characters riding into town at a decent pace and then coming in. It was essentially, it's before a scene and after a scene, if that makes sense. We're filming the first part of a scene where they ride into town. At a different time, we had already filmed the scene where they would walk in to have this business they were dealing with. And then we're filming again their exit.
And during the filming of those scenes, were there any close-up shots of revolvers that would have made the use of dummy rounds appropriate that you can recall?
We did no close-ups in those. It was wide versions of them riding into town and then getting off. It wasn't a lot of shots, to be honest, because you have something that big and pretty, you sort of tend to back up a little bit and show it off. And then when they were leaving, it was the character, I'll tell you exactly what it was. His foot goes into the holster, we come up with camera to reveal him getting into his horse and onto his horse and two men behind him, and then they ride out. That starts at what's sort of more termed as a medium shot and then becomes a wide shot as they leave.
And were there any other scenes that were filmed prior to lunch other than that one?
After we finished on that end of town, we moved up the road to the church and filmed a good amount of interior stuff in the church.
And the scenes inside the church, did those involve Mr. Baldwin?
Yes.
And if you know, were those scenes filmed in such close proximity that dummy rounds may be advisable?
I think a few shots, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and for other characters too. Because we had also filmed the marshals coming in. Essentially, the scene is the young boy helps his grandfather in. We filmed that a few times. He sits him down in a church pew, and then the boy runs out to get help.
And let me stop you.
Yeah.
The grandfather of the young boy...
Is Alex. The character's name is Harlan Rust.
And that's Mr. Baldwin's character.
Yeah, and the boy, his character's called Lucas.
Okay.
So Lucas brings Rust in. Rust has been shot in a previous scene. He's bleeding. The boy's going to go try to find help. He runs out. Then the lawmen come in, which we filmed, them coming in, fanning out around the church, talking to the Rust character, and the Rust character slumped over in the pew. So we filmed most of, if not all of, the pieces of the lawmen coming in, looking that way. We filmed a good portion of the pieces of the characters, the Rust and Lucas coming in before that.
Okay.
We did that all before lunch.
Okay. And after the filming of those scenes, what happened?
After the filming of that part of the scene, it was time for lunch. They called lunch.
When they call lunch, where do you go?
We had, everyone tends to get in the vans and go back to base camp. I remember Alec was still there as people were clearing out, and he and I and Helena talked a little bit about what was still to come, because we were going to pick literally right up where we left off after lunch. And people would go to get in the pass vans. It wasn't very far, but there was a decent sized hill they would have to go over, so they would just sort of, it would be faster to drive them in vans over to where we would have lunch.
Okay. And what happened when lunch was over?
Lunch was over. Everybody migrates back to the church, and you pick up where you left off.
Were you inside the church immediately after lunch was over?
Yeah.
Did you stay inside the church the entire time between when lunch ended and when the shooting occurred?
No. I at a certain point went outside of the church.
And why were you doing that?
So when we were setting up the camera angle, we were talking about what the shot was supposed to be. And forgive me if I over-explain this, but the scene is very tense, right? And so you achieve that through editing and camera angles. And so you want to see Rust laying, sitting there. Is he dead? Is he alive? The men coming closer, they're ordering him to give up. And then you cut to close-ups, and you're cutting from the character to the lawmen back and forth. And the first shot was supposed to essentially be the first moment we might realize that Rust is not, in fact, as injured as we might have thought. And so it was going to be a close-up on the weapon coming out of the holster. And so we had talked about that a little bit. Helena and I had talked, and there's Reed there, Serge was there. They're talking about the lighting. And then at a certain point, it's time to set the camera angle up. It's not a rehearsal yet. You're just sort of what they call auditioning the shot. Like, do you like this camera angle?
Okay.
And so once they do that, the camera was on the dolly, which is a gigantically heavy piece of equipment. And it was in the middle of an aisle between pews. So the pews were here and the dolly's in the middle. And when you're in a tight space like that, I generally, when they start moving the gear around, feel like I'm in the way. And so I got out of the way, went outside, and I figured, well, we still had one monitor. There was no village anymore that day, or that I'm aware of. Not in the traditional sense that there would be monitors lined up, but there was still a monitor that I could see the camera through.
Where was that monitor?
That was outside of the church. I don't remember if they had it on a stand or if it was on a cart. It was not a big one, but they were trying to get image up on the monitor having come back from lunch. And after a time, the image was just not coming up. And so I decided, before they get too far afield, if they're sort of setting this up in a way that I think isn't going to work, I would like to at least stop them and say, no, let's move it here. And so that's when I went back inside to have a look.
So at any point in time, did you see Ms. Gutierrez enter the church with the firearm?
No, it wasn't. I wasn't aware of her coming in or leaving or anything. The church was, there's an enormous amount going on. A million voices, it feels like. The special effects guys are rigging things up in the roof for debris for later on. When the shooting starts, there'll be debris falling down. And there are people working the lights. There are people moving the cameras. There's a lot going on. And so I didn't really register that.
Do you have any idea who provided Mr. Baldwin his revolver for the scene?
No, I mean, just beyond in a general sense about who's supposed to hand it off, but no, I didn't see anybody give it to him.
Okay. At some point, does Mr. Baldwin get his revolver?
I mean, he clearly had it. The interesting thing, I never saw him with it. I mean, he clearly had it because of what happened, but when I went in to look at to see what was going on with the camera angle, I remember there's sort of a big group kind of hovered around where he would be. He would be sitting in the pew. I just couldn't see him. I'm not the tallest guy in the world. And so I what I wanted to do was get up behind Helena to try to sneak a look over her. There's a little tiny monitor on the side of the camera to at least see that, to see what it was looking like. But I never even got a look at that.
Okay. So explain to us when you're going into the church and why and what you do and what happens.
So I went inside again to try to see what the angle was. There were a lot of voices. I heard Alex's voice. I heard Helena's voice. Everyone's sort of talking at once. I don't have a clear memory of how long I was standing behind her. I know I got up behind her to try to see on the monitor. And there was an incredibly loud bang that was not like the half and quarter loads you hear on a set. Those are sort of, they're loud poofs and pops. This was deafening. And it felt like somebody had taken a baseball bat to my shoulder. I remember that distinctly. And sort of stumbling back and shouting. I don't remember exactly what I said.
Were you able to see Ms. Hutchins at that time?
I did. I remember sort of stumbling back, and I either fell to my knees or I was sitting, and I distinctly remember her being lowered to the ground. People had her sort of by either side, and I still didn't quite know what had happened. Nothing made sense. I remember initially thinking, had she been startled by it? And they were sitting her down as a result, and then I saw the blood on her back.
And to the best of your recollection, what happened after that?
It got very chaotic. I remember them laying me down. I remember them laying her down next to me. Although we were sort of facing in opposite directions, my head was this way, her head was that way. I remember a lot of panic. I still just couldn't figure out what had happened. I thought, was there something that had been stuck in the barrel that came out? But just nothing made sense. I remember our dolly grip, Ross, coming to sort of grab me and trying to call me, and then Matt Hemmer came in, and between the two of them, I remember they sort of tended to me and were pulling up and just trying to find out where there was a hole.
Do you recall, Mr. Souza, at any point in time during that general time after the gun went off, having any kind of an interaction with Ms. Gutierrez?
I remember at one point looking up and her standing there with another person or a few other people, and she looked distraught. And I remember her saying, I'm sorry, Joel, and I remember somebody just screaming at her, and they just ushered her out.
Okay. At some point in time, were you taken from the scene?
Yeah. It's funny. When I hear later about how long we laid there, it felt like 5 minutes. And I remember looking over and her looking back at me. And she's had the biggest brown eyes I've ever seen. I don't remember who they took out first. They put me on some kind of stretcher and rolled me out.
And where did they take you?
They told me they were going to take me to the near. They said they were going to take me to the hospital, and I kept begging them to take me where she was, but they said they couldn't and that they would later. And they eventually took me to, I think it's Christus St. Vincent, I think that's what it's called, in Santa Fe.
And when you were at the hospital, did you have an understanding that you had been actually shot by a bullet?
No. No. I mean, I knew something got me, but they kept talking about this bullet, and it could not compute for me. I just kept saying, "You don't understand. No. This was a movie set. You don't, that's not possible. You don't get it." And they kept saying, no, it is. And I just keep insisting, "You don't understand, because this is not possible. It's just not possible that there's a live round. It's not, it just can't." And then they eventually maybe grew tired of my protesting about it, because they showed me the x-ray of my back and there was a very large bullet in it.
Okay. And sir, do you know whether Ms. Gutierrez was inside the church at the time that the gun went off?
I don't know.
In your experience, would you have had an expectation that she would have been in the church?
Yeah, the armor would be where the gun is.
Okay. I'll pass the witness.
Cross-examine. Yes, Your Honor. Good
morning,
sir.
Morning.
I have a few questions for you.
Sure.
So, Mr. Souza, I think before... you testified that before the Rust movie, your experience with firearms was on Crown Vic. Is that correct?
Yeah, more or less, yeah.
Okay, and that was a movie you directed.
I directed and wrote Crown Vic, yeah.
And you wrote that, okay.
Yeah.
And that, I think you said, had a couple scenes involving firearms, is that right?
Well, in where guns were fired, there wasn't, yeah, there were a few, yeah.
So you had an armorer on that set? Was that armor full-time?
He was there for the days that the guns were going to be used or fired, yeah.
Is that the only occasion you've ever worked on a set with an armor?
Yeah.
Okay. So is it fair to say your experience with working with armor was fairly limited prior to
up to that point, yeah.
Okay. So are you familiar with the SAG safety rules, where if the armor or prop master are not present, a responsibility falls on the AD?
I don't think I ever really reviewed the SAG rules. I don't think I would have been aware of what the procedure would have been if the armor wasn't there. I think my assumption was always that the armor was supposed to be there.
Okay, and you made an assumption, but if there's a SAG rule that indicates that responsibility then falls on the AD, are you aware of that?
That's not a rule that I'm aware of, no.
Okay. So you have not reviewed the SAG rules with respect to armors in general, or firearm safety in general?
No, I'm not a SAG member, so.
Okay.
But no, I haven't, no.
Okay. So if in the church at that time, Ms. Gutierrez-Reed was not present, and you don't remember?
I don't.
Okay. But Mr. Halls was. He was the first assistant director, correct?
He was the first assistant director, yes.
Now, you don't remember, I think you said, seeing who handed Mr. Baldwin the firearm.
That's correct.
And I think you said, sir, you don't remember Mr. Baldwin even having the revolver. You didn't see it. I mean, he had to have had it, but...
I know he had it before lunch.
Yeah.
I know he had to have had it for obvious reasons, but I didn't see him have it, holding it in that. It never got to that.
Okay. So before lunch, did you see who handed Mr. Baldwin the revolver?
No. I remember at some point before lunch hearing Dave call out Colt Gunn, but I don't remember who handed it to him.
Okay, and that's Dave Halls?
Yeah.
And Mr. Halls called out Colt Gunn before lunch, that you remember?
As I remember that, yeah.
Okay. Was the blocking done before lunch as well for that scene?
Well, I mean, there's a lot going on in that scene. We had sort of gotten to a certain point in it. What was coming next, we had not practiced before. What was coming next was essentially just picking up where we left off. That was what's called an insert. It was an insert shot.
Okay, sir. And this insert shot, this was going to be after lunch.
This was our first shot up after lunch.
Okay. And was this an insert shot, of an extreme close-up on the hand as it's pulling from the holster?
Yeah, it was sort of, it was, what I had in mind was, again, I talked about it a little bit before, but you have this, the hand kind of coming out like this, pulling it, yeah.
And when you just demonstrated that, you had the your hand coming across and pulling in front of you?
Correct.
Okay.
Because that's where he had, his thing was up here, so it would have naturally been going that way.
And do you know whether from the script, whether that firearm was supposed to be pointed towards the camera?
Well, I mean, it's not a matter of the script, really. For that specific shot, it was literally just supposed to be the gun being pulled out sideways.
Okay, sir, and when you demonstrated that, you did not have your hand pointed forward?
No.
Okay. So in that extreme close-up shot, it was just supposed to be pulled out in front? Just,
right. Okay. It was very short.
Okay. And was that designed to be like an insert to build tension in the scene?
Yeah, you cut back and forth and back and forth. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, I understand. So at the time that occurred, after lunch, when you're doing that extreme close-up scene, was that called a blocking?
Yeah, it's sort of blocking for camera, yeah, to see, you know, they want to see where the focus needs to be, you know, and how it's going to look, which way the camera's going to be oriented, essentially. When I said auditioning the shot, it's essentially the same thing as the blocking, camera blocking for the shot.
So, in essence, that scene is just setting up. There's not even filming going on at that point.
Correct.
Okay. So, with regard to that, did you ever hear Mr. Baldwin insist on having his revolver for that scene?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Okay. Were you aware that generally during the movie he liked to have his hero guns?
I don't think it's unusual for actors to like that thing. I mean, again, in hindsight, it would have been easy to sort of say, focus on that and think about it. At the time, I don't know that I had a sort of a clear understanding of that or not.
Okay.
I just don't want to speculate. You know?
Right, absolutely. So your knowledge of that kind of firearm and in that particular scene, at that time, it wasn't very extensive.
Right.
Okay. So in that scene, there's a blocking, and it's just going to be an extreme close-up. You are paying attention to the camera, as I understand. You're trying to look at the monitor.
Right. I wanted to see what the angle was. Okay. But since the monitor wasn't up yet, I thought, well, I should go inside and try to catch a look at it there, because if it doesn't fit what I need to come next, there are very specific pieces I need.
Okay.
And if it doesn't fit what comes next, we should stop. You know, there was not a lot of time to waste that day. So
absolutely. The day started off behind.
Yeah.
So is it fair to say that your attention was focused on trying to get the right kind of camera angle for that extreme close-up?
Yeah, because there's no real performance at play there. It's more of a technical exercise. It's just, yeah, Here's what I need to happen in this close-up in the editing room so that I can get this to work.
So at that time, and taking it back to that time, you're more focused on trying to get the scene set up. Your focus is not on looking around to see if Miss Gutierrez Reed is in the church. Is that fair?
I'd say that's fair, correct. Okay.
And so at the time, did it occur to you at all to look around and see if the armor is there, and if not, to call her, semi-call her?
No, I wouldn't say that it did.
Okay. And because at that time, there wasn't even going to be more than just pulling out of a holster, right?
That's correct.
Okay. So you didn't hear, you didn't know she was in the church, so obviously you didn't hear anybody go get her or call her back in.
Like I said, there were so many voices going on. I'm just trying to focus on what I can focus on at that point.
Absolutely. You described it, and I kind of got the picture in my head. It was a little bit, all kinds of things are going on at that moment. There's people trying to set up the cameras, and tell me if I'm wrong, or why don't you tell it in your words?
Well, there's just a lot of people moving in a lot of different directions. There's the special effects people hanging what are called poppers from the ceiling. They're sort of, what I talk about, they will, during the gunfight, they will pop and then debris will come raining down. There are people positioning lights. There are people moving cameras. There are wardrobe people in and out. There are, you know, there's just a lot. It's, you know, and it, under normal circumstances, it's quite a thing to watch, frankly.
I also want to ask you, on the long rifle, the Henry rifle, did you have much knowledge of how the Henry rifle works?
Beyond what I'd read about it when I was writing the script, no. I know it's a lever action, and that's what appealed to me in a visual sense. And but beyond that, not really, no.
Okay. Do you have much experience in general with knowing types of firearms, how they function?
No, outside of movies, I have nothing to do with guns.
Okay. Now, on that Henry rifle, you know there was one scene in the script where Mr. Baldwin's character is supposed to come out of the shack or whatever the structure is, and he's firing at the lawmen. You remember that, sir?
Right.
And that involved, did that involve his hero gun, the Henry rifle?
He was carrying it. He was not going to be firing it. It just was, it proved impractical.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, do you know that the Henry rifle is made such that there's a plunger on the bottom, and when the rounds are loaded, you can see or not see if rounds are in that rifle?
No, like I said, I'm not any kind of expert on a rifle.
Okay. Part of the armor's duties, would you agree with, they're to be there also for if the particular weapon Mr. Baldwin's holding needs to look like it's loaded, that's their job. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Okay. Because you got to have a realistic feel for the audience. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that's the entire reason dummies exist.
Okay. And so if the Henry rifle, if you can see at the bottom whether rounds are loaded or dummy rounds are loaded or not, that would be something that would you would want the armorer to handle.
If it was required for the scene, yes. Okay.
And in that particular scene, Mr. Baldwin is going to confront these lawmen?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, with regard to dummies, I think you said before this, before Rush, you weren't very familiar with dummies either.
I wasn't really familiar with the term of it. I think, you know, I guess it's, you know, I would have assumed that there was, if I'd watch a Western and you see something and they have a gun pointed and there's something at the end of the, sorry, there's something in the cylinders or whatever those are called, I think I would assume there's something in there. I wouldn't quite know what it is, but
okay.
Yeah.
And you talked about on the second go-round in your direct, you completed the rest filming?
We did.
And on that second filming, did you use wooden dummies?
I wouldn't even call them dummies because they didn't ever get loaded into anything. When there was a situation where we had to match previous shots, like on a bandolier where somebody had what would look like bullets, the armorer on that go-round had made them out of wood and then painted them and tuck them into the bandoliers.
Okay. And you know that the purpose of a dummy round, is to look very like a live round.
Yeah.
Okay. When it comes to safety on the set, who is the person in general that's responsible?
Well, I think in a general sense, I mean, the first assistant director is the safety officer on set. But beyond that, I think it also, you know, there's a set is generally a reel. If you see something, say something thing. So everybody is responsible to some degree to try to make sure there's a safe work environment. In terms of our safety officer, and who, I mean, generally the first AD is the safety officer.
And what you just said, and first AD is in charge of that, but if somebody, anybody on set, sees something unsafe, they should say something.
Yes, I think an example would be if there's an extension cord that's not taped down, or there's, you know, something that someone could hit their head on or something, you want to try to head those things off. There are a lot of sharp corners on movie sets.
Now, ultimately, with regard to safety, the producers are where the buck stops. Do you agree with that?
I think the producers are the people who write the checks are generally where the buck stops on everything in life. But I don't think a movie set is any different.
One other portion. Mr. Baldwin, when you talked about earlier about the armorer saying something to him, did you ever communicate to the armorer that she had issues that she needed to confront Mr. Baldwin or tell Mr. Baldwin, or did you ever say anything about that?
I don't think we ever talked about that. I think she and I might have had two conversations all told.
Okay.
But that wouldn't have been one of them.
Okay. And would you agree with me, Mr. Baldwin has a fairly strong personality in that movie?
Sure. I think, yeah.
And we saw some clips on that. Finally, you mentioned that the day three, you felt good about how that went. And mm-hmm. It was an amazing team of professionals, I think you said, that pulled together and did a good job. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think we had a very strong crew.
And Ms. Gutierrez-Reed also performed very well that day.
Yeah, on that day I didn't take any issue.
Yeah.
I was happy with everybody.
Okay. All right, Your Honor, may I have just a moment?
More raw courtroom audio from the Rust Alex Baldwin movie shooting trial is on the way.
Press subscribe so you don't miss a moment.
From the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.